Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's podcast. There's no special announcements or anything, so let's just jump right in. First up, the US localization of Shenmue 2 for the Dreamcast was found and dumped online. And if you're not a fan of the series, this might be a little bit confusing, because Shenmue 2 was released on the Dreamcast in Japan and in Europe as well, I believe, and it was also released on the Xbox and then in some HD remasters and other ways in the future. So apparently the best way to experience Shenmue 2 might very well be those Xbox versions or even the later HD remasters, and John Linneman did some awesome videos as usual on those for anybody interested. So while I'm always excited for finds like this, this is more of a historical find than something you might want to jump on and start playing. Now, that's not to say that a team of people won't finish the US localization and fix some of the little bugs that are with it, but I think generally speaking, if you're going to just play Shenmue 2, you might want to check out some of the HD remasters. But if you're in the US and you're a huge fan of the game, it's out there for you to check out. You can kind of go through and see the differences and the bugs that are still in it. And overall, I still call these things an amazing find. I just like to properly categorize it. And I may be wrong. I'm not an expert in the Shenmue series, so if anybody wants to correct me in the comments, I'm always open to learn something new. But I always like to make sure to put these in the categories of, holy crap, you know, this is almost finished, like Star Fox 2. Like, we could just tweak this a little bit and make it a playable, amazing game. All the way on the other side to, here's just some assets and a barely playable demo, but look at how cool this is because it's a view into something that could have been done, and everything in between. I just like to curb people's expectations for this stuff. And while I think if you're a fan of Shenmue 2 and the Dreamcast, you should probably check this out, or at the very least, check out the post on SegaSaturnShiro.com. But if you're just into the games, you probably want to check out the HD remasters instead. Yehel from Wrestling with Gaming just posted a documentary about the making of Perfect Dark for the N64. And as usual, it was an awesome look into the creation of the game, with lots of things that any fan of the game or the N64 or even just game creation history would want to see. So I don't want to really spoil it at all, but if you're a fan of video game documentaries, definitely check this one out. There are two things that I did want to talk about real quick, though. Nothing spoiler-esque, but one of them was that the team at first seemed to have pretty much unlimited time and resources within reason to finish the game. And that led to two things. First, it led to the project being constantly delayed because there was no hard deadline, but it also led to them doing a lot of cool innovation that they might not have thought to do if they didn't have that open schedule, because they might think something like, oh, we might not ever get that new engine done in time, or that new thing, you know, ready for launch day. So it's always kind of funny to me to see that side of things, because I feel like I do my best work under pressure, and some of the stuff I say, oh, there's no deadline, I'll get to it when it's ready because I want it to be perfect, never releases. So I think it's kind of neat to see a balance of both of those things. And I think anybody in the nerd world has probably been there at some project or another. And seeing that really did make me want to put hard deadlines on things just to try to finish up some of the stuff that I've been working on forever. The other thing that really, really annoyed the heck out of me was that the entire time the video was going, YouTube put a includes paid promotion thing on the top left of the video that I could not get rid of. And while that certainly annoyed me for personal reasons, which I'll talk about later in the podcast, it also makes no sense whatsoever. First of all, any kind of watermarking like that could cause burn-in if it's a long enough video, so that's just really stupid to do that to your customers. But also, the paid promotion had nothing to do with Perfect Dark. That would be something where, like, if Yehel did a video trying to convince you to buy a brand new sealed version of Perfect Dark that was sponsored by the company that's now selling it, yes, that would be something that would be totally fair to put up. But trying to promote some meathead bodybuilder cereal while you're talking about a video game has absolutely no bearing on anybody's purchase of the video game, and there's no reason that watermark should have stayed there the entire time. So I don't know if that was a bug. I don't know if it always does it. I remember seeing it like go up and then turn off after a few seconds, but I don't know. That annoyed the heck out of me, and it's always annoyed the heck out of me, but hell, you might be thinking the same thing about this video, so I guess we'll see how that all works out. And by the way, the cereal looks really good. I was just being an asshole and teasing. The Jamix I.O. board for the Mister is now in stock and ready for purchase. So this is not a pre-order. By the time this airs, they should still be in stock. And I believe that they're going to just have an out-of-stock notice when they run out. I don't think they're taking pre-orders at the time. So if you were waiting for something like this, now is the time to purchase. And if you don't know what it is, I'll get to that right now. The Jamix is a very advanced I.O. board for the DE10. So the Mister project works based off of a dev kit called the DE10 Nano, which has the majority of everything that you need to run all of the software and the cores on it. The only extra thing that you would need is a RAM module, some kind of USB hub, and then if you wanted expanded functionality, you would also get an I.O. board. And that's essentially what the Jamix is. It's just an advanced I.O. board that allows for things like analog video output, as well as JAMA output, which is pretty awesome. So now, and it also is in a mini ITX format. I'm sorry, those acronyms always trip me up. They always have my whole life. Mini ATX, micro ATX. This is mini ITX. So it will fit in any PC case that is that sized or larger. And it even comes with a standard IO port cover so that it would look exactly like it would with a PC. So this opens up a bunch of different possibilities. First of all, if you leave it exposed, you could just swap back and forth between it being a standard Mister with analog video RGB output and a JAMA connector. Or if you put it in any mounting solution, you could have it permanently for one or the other. So I could see a lot of people wanting to mount this directly inside their arcade machine, never use it for anything other than that, but already have all of the connections that you would need for all of the harnesses, different types of arcade boards, everything right there installed, already built right into it. Now, the other thing with it is that you could install it in a PC case, which might be pretty neat for people that use Mister predominantly for the older PC cores. So I see a lot of people purchasing this thing for one or the other reasons, probably a bunch using it for both, but I think this is a pretty cool device. I've seen it in person when Zero came to Brooklyn Arcade's opening, and I thought it was very cool, but I have not had time to do a deep dive on it yet. I imagine, based on the people that are working on it, it's totally fine, and I don't really want to get into nitpicking. Well, this I.O. board is 0.01% better than that I.O. board. I think that's just a waste of everybody's time, especially mine, no offense. I think the much more important thing to focus on is, first of all, does it all work the way it's supposed to, which I believe it does. It's been in the hands of a bunch of testers already. And what are the options? And how does that apply to your setup? And I think that is the number one thing to concentrate on when choosing which Mister I.O. board you would like to use for your setup. Now, there's always the basics that would apply to everything in electronics. If you see a cheap knockoff listed on a website that's known for selling cheap, low-quality products, don't buy that one, regardless of what it is. But as long as it's being sold and manufactured by somebody who's known in the retro gaming community and has a good reputation, then I don't think you'd have anything to worry about other than features. So eventually, whenever free time ever comes my way, I would love to do a couple of videos on Mister that I'd like to concentrate on more of the evergreen side of things. So what is the Mister project? How do you get started? And then how do you choose a case? And this is definitely, or a case in an I.O. board, sorry. So this is definitely something I would want to show off because of its multi-use, multi-use scenarios and stuff like that. And I think it's something that's got a lot of pretty cool potential. So I'm looking forward to checking it out. Also, the team behind the Jamix posted kind of a cryptic tweet that showed a device that can connect to this that essentially turns this and the DE10 into a scaler based on the Mister's architecture. Now, I got such mixed feelings about this because if that's completed, that would be pretty awesome, as there's a whole bunch of scenarios in which you might want to scale your original consoles via RGB or component video the same way you would scale cores in Mister. The idea of that seems really awesome, and I could think of a ton of reasons why people might prefer this over other scalers, and I could think of an equal amount of reasons why people would want to stick with the scalers they have. But the problem is, I don't think it's finished, and I think it's a pretty complicated thing, because that would require a piece of custom hardware that would connect to this, that would require the software to integrate into the Mister project, either by a forked core or just a different app that you run, which I think that would be easier to do. And then, of course, it would have to comply with all the open source stuff that Mister has to offer. So I'm not really sure what was up with that tweet. Maybe it was a glimpse of some awesomeness to come. Maybe they meant it as, hey, here's something we're working on, not sure if it's finished yet. I don't really know. You'll have to ask the Jamix team that. But I wanted to address it first and foremost, because if I didn't, I'd get 100 comments asking why I didn't address it. But also, I just wanted to give realistic expectations. That's not a compliment. That's not an insult. That is just a very emotionless, nerd-based interpretation of what this could be. I just want to once again curb expectations and make sure people know what it is that they're getting. But the Jamix that you would purchase right now is $225 plus shipping, does not include the scaler board that goes with it, but it would, even at its higher price point, be an excellent option for some people's setups. So check out the website, check out all of the specs, and see if this is something that would work for you. And if not, go check out all of the other options out there. I love the one from Ivory, the seller that's on AliExpress, and the seller that's also proving that just because it's on AliExpress doesn't mean it's garbage. I think those are great. I, of course, love all the stuff from Mr. Add-ons, who's been doing it since the very beginning. And there's the new one from Retro Man Cave. I forgot the name. I apologize. But I've talked about it. That one looked awesome. And then there's a whole bunch of smatterings of different types that people have customized. I still keep meaning to try out Antonio Villena's boards. I just haven't had time, and I keep forgetting. My apologies to them as well, but there's a lot of really good options out there that offer slightly different features, so just take a moment to research which one that you want. But no matter what, buying the DE10 Nano and a good RAM board is something that you could do, that you should do no matter what. Then I would also recommend that little $6 USB hub that I link on the Mister page, just because you never know if you might need it or not. And, you know, even if it's something, I know a lot of people say I tell people to waste money, but I hope you would agree that if you're investing a few $100s into a project like this, dropping $6 on something that may sit in your drawer and never be used is worth it, because if you ever do need to bypass whatever hubs are built in or just use it directly to the DE10, that is a very handy piece of equipment for you. So I strongly recommend dropping that $6. And if it bothers you enough that there's an affiliate code, just open it up in private browser, take just the Amazon link and put it in another browser, and that way you could screw me out of my .00001 cent of affiliate commission. It's not about the commission, it's about, I really think that's a tool you should have if you have a Mister. I've used mine so many times to troubleshoot stuff. But enough rambling on a $6 adapter. Check out the Jamix if it's all right, and see if it's the right thing for your setup, and hopefully I'll have a video kind of showing all the different options and why you might want them at some point. Developer Robert Pipe has just crossed a huge milestone towards getting the PlayStation 1 FPGA core completed for the Mister. And this is not a public release, it is a very buggy Patreon-only beta core, but the progress is significant enough that I had to talk about it here and write a post about it, because it is a very big deal how far he's gotten so far. At the moment, you're able to take a rip of a game, so the same type of rip that you would find to use on an optical drive emulator, and you could boot that right in Mister. At the time that I recorded the video that I was showing, you had to still use fast boot mode, but Robert has already gotten it to work with the official BIOS, which kind of means that the BIOS thinks the Mister is a PlayStation 1, which is a pretty big step forward. The games looked great. It booted fine, it seemed to run at a decent speed, and it ran with just one RAM module. And that's something that people were debating and not sure how that would work with things going on in the future. So a very small little background with that. With these bigger cores that are being developed for the Saturn and the PlayStation and possibly others, it might require two RAM modules instead of just one. And at the moment, this demo works with just one RAM module, and Robert's not sure if it's going to require two for the final implementation or if it's just going to be able to run on that one. Same with the Sega Saturn core that's currently in progress. And this was done via help from Sorg. So, you know, just a huge shout out to Sorg for everything he does for the project anyway, but this was a pretty big deal because this allowed a lot of people to beta test it who only had one RAM module and just kind of wanted to try things out. So as always, I don't want to put any pressure on the developers working on these. Do whatever it takes to get it working. There's no rush, but I did want to tell everybody that the PlayStation 1 FPGA core is very real, and it looks like within a relatively short period of time, you know, probably months, not years, just a guess here, you should be able to just play PlayStation 1 games on your Mister, which is pretty huge, because once that's completed, some of the quality of life improvements can be naturally implemented right into that without too much work compared to all the other work that went into this. So stuff like blending the dithering layers and just general ways to make it look better, both on flat panels and just in RGB on a CRT monitor. So this is a big deal for a million reasons. So definitely, absolutely support Robert and Sorg on Patreon if you're a fan of their work and you want to see more of this. I always try to make that point that, you know, so many people want to contribute to Mister, but they don't have the skills to program FPGA. I certainly don't. I wish I did. But if you could afford just the very basic support for these people's Patreon accounts, it's all about the quantity. So tell your friends, tell everybody who's interested in this, and if enough people support, hopefully it could fund more things like this. So I always want to show my support, both emotionally and monetarily, when I could afford it, to all of these amazing developers, and I just wanted to kind of share that as well. And if you want to hear more from Robert, definitely check out the interview we did a while back. He just seemed like a really cool guy, and I'm glad I get to support him, and I'm so impressed with all the work that he's been able to complete with the Mister project. This week's podcast is sponsored by PCBWay, one of a few companies that's been working closely with the retro gaming scene that have helped make many of the projects I've been a part of come to life. To use their services, just upload your Gerbers, tweak the final settings to your liking, and wait for your PCBs to arrive. I usually order a few more than I need, as the cost is mostly for setup, and for small runs, the price doesn't change too much with quantity. If you've had an open source project you've been looking to make, head over to PCBWay.com and sign up for a free account. Okay, back to the podcast. The Zelda 64 reverse engineering team has just announced that they've completed reverse engineering Ocarina of Time for the Nintendo 64. And while the reverse engineering process is just about complete, I don't believe they've gotten much farther than that, but this is still really exciting news for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, that's a massive undertaking, and I think people should definitely be celebrating a team that is willing to do all of that work. But also, if you look to what happened with Super Mario 64, this opens up a world of possibilities. And in fact, just recompiling Super Mario 64 and injecting it back into the ROM had shown some performance increases, and we did a post on that a while back if anybody is interested in all of that stuff. But then they also did things like, you know, recreate the assets in HD and do widescreen versions of it. So while none of that has happened yet, the fact that it's reverse engineered and the code is out there for people means that projects like that can be started now. So hopefully that means at some point between now and never, we're going to get an HD remake of Ocarina of Time. And I really hope stuff like that happens. It's kind of sad that the community has done a lot more for all of these games than Nintendo. You know, I know that's not their focus. I know their focus is making money while utilizing their intellectual property that's already out there. But I think that we do such a good job with this stuff that, I don't know, I wish Nintendo would be open to community collaborations or something like that, because how cool would it have been to have the Super Mario 64 remake available on the Switch or something? I don't know. It's probably impossible and will probably never ever happen, but I'm allowed to dream, right? So anyway, if you want more information on this, check out the main posts. The official project is linked here, as well as how I found out about it from the post on videogameschronicle.com, which Dan shared, so credit where credit's due. But yeah, this is an awesome accomplishment, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to come next from this. I just interviewed Kevin Millott, the creator of a bunch of awesome Virtual Boy products, including the Hyper Flash 32, as well as the Dreamcast Link cable, a bunch of cool things for the Wonder Swan, and a whole bunch of other nerdy awesomeness. The first thing that I learned in the interview was for the past 8 years, I've been pronouncing Kevin's name wrong. So my deep apologies for that. I think everybody knows that I try really hard to get people's names pronounced correctly, but I'm just really terrible at it, and this is a perfect example. So my apologies. But as always, these interviews are available everywhere podcasts are found. So everywhere my videos are posted, as well as all of the major podcast services, including Spotify, Apple, and Amazon. And Amazon has recently been sending some very enthusiastic emails telling me that I should promote their service, and I have no idea why. So if anybody has any ideas on why anybody would want to listen on Amazon versus any of the other platforms, please let me know. It could be ignorance. Maybe they just have a bunch of awesome new features I'm not aware of. Or it could just be Amazon trying to make more money like Amazon does. I don't know. Either way, there was enough press behind it that I figured I would mention that these podcasts are available on Amazon as well, should that be the place that you choose to listen to these. I mean this with love and respect. I don't care where you listen to them. If you listen to them, I'm just grateful for the support, and I'm very happy that you like hearing from these amazing people that I get to talk to. But as far as where you listen or watch these things, I could care less. Do it whatever is the easiest way for you. I'm just really glad that somebody out there is listening, because there have been a bunch of amazing people that I've gotten to interview, and there's hopefully a whole lot more in the future. And I want to continue to highlight all of the awesome people in retro gaming that have been doing behind the scenes stuff forever. So anyway, check out the podcast and all the rest of them if you'd like. Everything's just listed under RetroRGB to keep it simple. Krix just released a new firmware update for the Mega EverDrive Pro, which adds a few notable features. The first is an easy one. It just allows for you to use either Player 1 or Player 2's controllers to scroll through the menu, which is something that might just be helpful depending if you have a light gun connected or whatever it might be. So that's always kind of neat. Also, the save state recovery slot functionality was ported over to this. That's the one where if you overwrite a save state slot, it automatically copies that to save slot number 99, and kind of like a recycle bin for save states in case you accidentally overwrite it. I think that's a really handy feature, and I'm assuming Krix will probably port that to any one of his ROM carts that have this similar chipset that make the porting easier to do that with. But also, here's another cool one, and there's actually a double cool thing to talk about with this. Krix also added a different way to handle save states. And at the moment, before this firmware was released, every save state was contained in one folder. But that meant that the ROM cart had to scan that folder every time you wanted to load or save states, which would cause slowdowns, not in the game, but just in the save and load process. So Krix has a new way of doing it, where each game has its own subfolder created, and the save slots get stored under there, which I think is a great way to do it. It's a better way to organize it, and according to Krix himself, it does speed up scanning the folders in those situations. The folders are automatically created and named the names of the ROMs, so if you change the ROM name, the save state won't work, but that's the same as it's always been, probably for all of these things. But the one thing that I thought was even cooler was I was reading about this and I said, well, let me try this thing out, you know, because am I going to have to recreate all of these folders by hand? And nope, not at all. As soon as you insert the SD card after adding the new firmware, first it says new firmware loaded, default settings have been loaded, and then it says export old save state files. So Krix already has it implemented, so all you have to do is hit yes, and it automatically creates new folder names and moves the save state files over to it. So you basically don't have to do anything other than hit yes. So big props to Krix for that one. Not only is he coming up with new and cool features, but he's making it pretty painless for us to use it. Just a quick shot for anybody interested of the before and after. You have a bunch of random save states in one folder, and then they all have their individual folders afterwards. So it's a very cool thing to have updates that are a help and save us time and super easy. So shout out to Krix for doing that. There's also some fixes for things like CD audio activation for Pure Solar and glitches when using the RAM cart function on the Mega SG. So overall, if you're a user of the Mega EverDrive Pro, Pro, I would absolutely upgrade and just see what you got from here. And just remember that when you use it for the first time, to hit yes on importing all of the save state slots, and then there's no other work to it other than pressing that one button. A trailer for the upcoming fan-created game Mother 4 has just been released, and this game is an unofficial spiritual sequel to Mother 3, which was also known as Earthbound on the SNES. The video footage shows off some of the same rhythm-based attacks that are featured in Mother 3, as well as the rolling health in Mother 2 Earthbound, and it has a style and character design that appears to be unique, but a throwback to the original games. So, overall, if you're a fan of the Mother series, or if you played it as Earthbound, I would strongly recommend checking out Dan's post and the trailer to see if this is a game that you might want to check out when it's released. And, of course, when it is fully released, we'll do a post about that as well. So, always give props to teams that do such extensive and amazing work like this. Even if you're not a fan of the Mother series, it's definitely worth at least just thinking about how much effort would go into something like this. So much appreciated whenever people do stuff like that. A while back, Dan wrote a post that talked about the history of how an awesome team of people figured out that the colors that were being generated from the RGB output of PC Engine and TurboGrafx systems weren't the same color palette as the composite video output. And Dan's original post kind of went through the timeline and discussed the players involved, how they figured that out, and the changes that were implemented and where you could access those changes, the easiest, of course, being the Mister Project. But Furtech has recently also done a post about that, discussing all of the details behind the decapping process and how he was able to figure out the differences using what he learned in that process. And I was absolutely blown away by the post. If you are a nerd, you have to at least skim this, but I would recommend giving it a read because it's very detailed and shows exactly how much work it takes to do something like that. So just a huge shout out and thank you to Furtech and everybody else that works on projects like these, and people like Dan who helped chronicle them and really put them out there in a way that people could understand that are non-nerds. So I guess if you're interested in this stuff, I would start with Dan's original post that's links here, and then jump into Furtech and really, really jump into the nerdy factor of it. I just thought it was absolutely awesome, and I'm really glad that he took the time both to do the work and to chronicle what it was like to actually do the reverse engineering process. So thank you very much to everybody involved, and this is nerd gold here. Anybody that's interested in this stuff is going to love skimming through and reading it. Well, that's it for this week's podcast, which was the first sponsored podcast I've ever done. This week was obviously PCBWay, which I meant what I said. They're a company I've worked with before. Their team was great to talk to, and I'm happy to promote their services because I know a lot of people out there that use them and have really good things to say about them. They're not the only PCB manufacturer out there, but they're good, so I'm very happy to have worked with them, and hopefully this will lead to other things in the future. I'm not sure if they're going to be ads every week, if there's going to be different ads or the same ads. So as always, thank you so much for everybody who watches, listens, plays nicely in the comments, and especially thank you so much to everybody who supports in any possible way, because you are the ones that have kept me going this far, and I'm just trying to take your support and others to keep it going even farther. So thank you all so much, and I'll see you next week.